Interesting problems are problems worth solving. And there are more interesting problems than there have ever been before, and more ways to solve them. Hey, it's Seth, and this is Akimbo. I'm back after a long hiatus. 250 episodes is a lot of episodes, and I'm glad that I was able to offer them to you. I've been spending the last year working with a really cool team of people on a new project, and I thought it would be interesting to share what I've learned about interesting problems and the ways we can solve them. I'll take you through how we approach this, and maybe we'll be able to discover some ways that you can bring similar thinking to the problems that you're facing. Okay, so here's the deal. Last year, charities in the United States raised $350 billion from consumers. Some of that is direct donation. Some of it comes at a dreaded gala where people pay money to sit at a big round table where it's too noisy to talk to anyone and where nothing particularly interesting happens. And if some of it, not very much, but some of it comes from charity auctions. But charity auctions are fundamentally flawed. And the reason is the charity, which is auctioning off something like a ski chalet or a lunch with somebody, wants to raise as much money as possible. And the bidders generally are looking for a bargain. Because once it feels like an auction, we adopt our mindset, the eBay mindset, the mindset of, well, doesn't cost anything to bid, but I'm not going to overpay. Let's find out how little I can pay for this. I looked at this because I've been working with nonprofits my whole life. My parents worked, sometimes as volunteers, sometimes professionally, in the nonprofit world. And I grew up believing that this was normal. So, is it possible to fix the charity auction, to come up using new approaches and new technology with an interesting way to help charities raise more money without the overhead of a gala and a lot of drama, but also to make it more fun for people to donate to causes that they care about? Because after all, if you want to donate, you can donate right now. The purpose of putting on this sort of auction would be to make it more fun, more interesting, to capture your attention and desire so that you'll go ahead and make a bigger donation. So we built goodbids.org. It began as a back of an envelope idea that took advantage of the fact that the internet is a lot more stable than it was 20 years ago. In many ways, it's a mature technology. And platforms like WordPress and WooCommerce mean that we can build industry standard applications that don't crash and that aren't particularly onerous to code and maintain. So what's the idea behind GoodBids? It's something I call a positive auction. When I say the word auction, you're thinking, oh, $5, $20, $40, going, 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 gone, the high bidder gets it. But a positive auction doesn't work that way. Positive auction has a couple unique elements. The first one is that the bidding starts at a really low number, let's say $5, and goes up in a standard increment, in this case, $10. So the first bid is $5, second bid is $15, third bid is $25, you get the idea. And you cannot skip a step. No one can come along and bid $75 if the top bid is $25. It's a ladder, step by step by step. But here's what makes it a positive auction. Every bid is actually a non-refundable donation directly to the charity. It goes straight from you to the cause in question. So that's $5, $15, $25, each one of which is a donation. So when we tested this, we auctioned off an Apple Watch, an $800 gift card from Apple. You could buy anything you wanted with it. And it went for $235. Now that sounds like an incredible bargain for the winner, because it is. For about a third of its retail value, even less, they got the gift card. But the charity, in this case, our partner BuildOn.org, got more than $2,400. I'll let you do the math. And it gets even more interesting when the bidding gets higher. If something goes for $1,000, the charity gets more than $50,000 because it keeps compounding. The insight here is something I call unstable equilibrium, because it's like watching an egg balancing on the top of a pencil. It's going to fall. Someone's going to get this item for a tiny fraction of what it's worth. Maybe it will be you. And the thing about unstable equilibrium is we don't know how to turn away. We don't want to turn away. And so someone who might today not necessarily be ready to donate to a charity just for the good feeling looks at this thing, this Apollo 11 logo, this loaf of bread from France, this interaction with Simon Sinek, and says, whoa. And it captures our attention. It captures our enthusiasm. And then the game kicks in again and again and again. Unstable equilibrium can be at the heart of a lot of our interest. Once we are dealing with the things we want that delight us, we need something that makes it worth paying attention. Every person who bid along the way gets the satisfaction of knowing they made a donation. And for a little while, they get the good feeling that comes from thinking you might win the reward. And so the auctions go on. And as we get close to the deadline, if someone bids near the deadline, we extend the auction. So there's no benefit to waiting to the last minute to snipe. So that's the first shift that positive auctions offer. The second one is, if you take the link that we give you, custom for you, and share it with your friends, and they bid in any auction, any amount, even $5, you, as the person who referred it, get a free bid in any auction of any amount, even $1,000. And it doesn't cost the charity anything. It doesn't cost the charity anything because all you've done is ratchet the auction up. So if no one else bids and you win, congratulations, it didn't cost you anything, but the charity was going to sell it for $990 anyway, so it didn't cost anybody a thing. This builds virality into the fabric of what we're building. So here we have this interesting solution to a problem. We're going to be launching it very soon, and we'll find out if it's a good solution. And then the question was, will charities, nonprofits, want to use this? Because we do charge them. We charge them about 10% of what they raise. If they don't raise anything, we don't charge them anything. And it is something new. And in general, nonprofits are rarely on the vanguard of new tech. So what we did first is Anne-Marie Cruz, who runs our partnerships, reached out to charities we had relationships with and invited them to be part of our advisory board. This is the kind of interaction that would have been very difficult to do 20 or 30 years ago. But now it's a matter of answering some emails, having low-cost interactions, getting respect for your opinions back and forth and back and forth. The second thing we did was decide to launch with some auctions that we are hand-tuning to show charities what is possible. For example, the author David Meerman Scott donated a logo and a shoulder patch from the Apollo 11 mission to the moon that belonged to Neil Armstrong. This is a priceless artifact of a moment in our history. We have folks like Nicole Walters, the New York Times bestselling author and coach, offering up 2 hours with her in her office in Los Angeles to talk about what you're working on, or Shark Damon John giving you feedback on your business, or a legendary A&R person listening to your group's recording and giving you honest feedback about the music. We've got a whole bunch of really cool items. I have to pinch myself when I think about them. Don't get me started on the Bob Dylan Slow Train Coming tour jacket. When people hear about these auctions, some of them are going to say, oh, I'd love to have that. And it's only going for $55? It's only going for $255? We have no idea when these auctions are going to end. We have no idea how much they're going to raise. But the cost of finding out isn't particularly onerous. That it cost millions and millions and millions of dollars to build eBay because they had to build everything from scratch. But our partners at Vigit in Maryland, together with folks like Jasper Kroom and Felice Delegata, both from the Carbon Almanac, are showing up and contributing insight and the ability to leverage their skills to help us take this iterative process forward. So when I said there are new ways to solve old problems, that's what I'm getting at. We have taken this all for granted. A pandemic hit, and we figured out how to work in a distributed manner from home. But we still think a normal business has fancy offices and receptionists and carpeting and all the rest of it. But in fact, fascinating problems are being solved by groups of people coming together for a period of time, engaging with each other to articulate what might work, putting it in front of a community, building in a network effect, coming up with what I call an elegant solution. Elegant doesn't mean fancy. It means direct and lightweight and resilient. It means you found a way from here to there that might be effective and has been previously unexplored. These elegant solutions are all around us. The products and services we love, we tend to love them because of their elegance. Here are some of the tactics that I learned about solving interesting problems in no particular order. One, see the system. The system likes being the system. What is maintaining the status quo? What does each player in the system want? And where are the spots where you can make an impact? Two, earn the benefit of the doubt. The benefit of the doubt means that when people are unsure, why will they believe you? Why will they give what you are offering them a chance? Three, find your people, a cadre, a cohort, a tribe of folks that you can work with, probably asynchronously, possibly online, to build a minimum viable product for the smallest viable audience. By minimal, I don't mean it's a compromise. It's the opposite of that. It's enough. It's enough to prove that you can gain a foothold. And by smallest, I don't mean tiny. I mean, what's the group of people that if you persuaded them to come along, it would be enough? In our case, we only need a few charities and a few hundred bidders for this to begin the process of changing everything. And then lastly, I'd say, make sure you have the resources to get through the dip, to pick a problem that you can solve, not that anyone can solve, but that you have the resources to push forward enough to make a difference to enough people that it catches on. One thing you learn if you're trying to light a fire in Algonquin Park in Canada, particularly after a rainy day, is if you try to build too big of a fire with too many logs, it's not going to work. But just about anybody can start a very, very tiny fire with the right kindling. And then, if you're patient, you can take the time for it to grow over time. David Deutsch has written some really cool books about infinity, about physics, about possibility. And his notion that all problems are solvable is worth considering. If it's not solvable, it's not a problem. It's a situation. And there are situations all around us, situations that will not bend, situations that cannot be turned into problems. But what we're finding as we put these innovations that have come before to work, what we're finding is that things that we thought of as situations are actually interesting problems. Problems that might require some guts or insight or persistence or a lot of resources to solve. And they're all around us. But to get to the problem, we have to strip away our expectations about what it takes to solve it. Because if you try to do what has been done before, you're probably going to get what has been gotten before. And instead, we have this opportunity right here in front of us to solve new problems in interesting ways. As I wrap up this riff, I get an opportunity I don't usually have with a mature project. As a project tries to solve an interesting problem, the number of people involved continues to grow. And by the time it launches, the list is often a little too long to enumerate. When they launched the original Macintosh 40 years ago, the one that changed the world, Steve Jobs had the core team write their names on the inside of the mold for the box that the Mac came in. Not the cardboard box, but the Mac itself. Guy Kawasaki told me he just missed the cutoff of being immortalized. So, if you can indulge me for a moment, here's a list in no particular order. Jennifer Myers-Chua, Ramon Ray, Aveline Morris. They've been part of the group. I've mentioned so many of the others by name already. Jason Flom, Guy Kawasaki, Apollonia Poulin, Greg Lynn, Claire Saffitz, Matt Mullenweg, Jim Zilkowski, and Tammy Zonker. I've left out a bunch of people, but I'm listing them because it's a lesson worth acknowledging, which is we don't solve interesting problems, particularly interesting problems that have been around for a while, by ourselves. We solve them by working with other people, dancing together, coming up with the best each of us has to offer. I hope I've inspired you at least a little bit to take a look at some interesting problems in your life, to find the people who might be able to dance with you, to figure out a small enough solution for a small enough audience that you can begin the process. Thanks for listening to my rant. Go make a ruckus.